Roll. All right. Welcome to Security Guy TV, Security Guy Radio, also.com okay. at Infuse 2017, sponsored by Guidance Software. What's your name, sir?
Matt Bromley.
And what company with?
I work with a company called Kroll, K-R-O-L-L. Kroll is a private investigation firm.
We sure, I know Kroll very well.
Yeah, there we go.
Who's the LAPD guy? Who's one of the head guys in L.A.? I know that company very well.
Does he work in cyber or?
No, I think he's doing cyber, yeah. But
is it Eric or Jason? No, Terry?
I can't remember. I'll remember in a minute.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
All right, so you work for Kroll. All right.
Yeah, we got quite a few folks, though.
Yeah.
LAPD does not narrow it down much, so there
right.
we go.
And what's your website?
Kroll.com, actually. All and right. then you have to click the cyber link to get to my team to see what we do.
But, okay.
Yeah, we're on there.
And so what specifically does your team do?
So specifically, I'm an incident responder. I do digital forensics and incident response. That ranges everything from nation-state level attacks, helping companies respond to that, to litigation support, digital forensics, data recovery, IP theft. Believe it or not, ransomware cases have popped up recently.
That's a big one, yeah.
No, but it's a wide range of things. But basically anything within the DFIR space we assist with.
Now, I was confused when you said Kroll because you're branding on your shirt here. So what's
I'm
going on there?
Also an instructor with SANS
okay.
as well. And for those of you not at Infuse, SANS is actually right across the aisleway here from
right.
us. SANS is an information security education institution. I'm sure a lot of folks have heard of it. We teach courses. There's a DFIR discipline, which is what I work in specifically. There's also a security discipline where we teach folks penetration testing, different hacking techniques. There's also more management style classes
right.
as well. There's a whole wide range of them.
So now a friend of mine works in the employment recruiting business for IT.
Okay.
She says there's a 1 million person shortage of people that are qualified to do these kind of jobs. Zero unemployment in that sector.
Yeah.
Right? So what you do is so important because we need to bring in the next generation of people that can understand this stuff.
Definitely.
Are you finding this a challenge when you go out and do training? Or is there a group of people like me that, you know, I had a computer in 1984, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
My kids don't get it. They should,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
But there's this place where you did. I didn't invent the technology, my generation, but we got it brand new and said, "Wow, look at that!"
Right, right.
And now there's this generation of kids, my kids. This is normal. Hasn't it always been like this? They're not interested in how it works.
They're not.
Are you finding a shortage of this? You know, in your or a group of people in your training that just are kind of like that gap? I guess is the way to describe it.
So, yes and no. The thing about SANS classes is usually folks who come and take training with us work in this type of industry.
Okay.
It's not to necessarily learn about it. It's to enhance their skills.
All right.
It's to hone their skill set. So it's a different type of crowd. But now there are some more. We do offer kind of management style classes where we do have folks who come in that exact position who said, look, I remember punch cards. And all of a sudden, I've got to have two-factor on my phone.
Right.
What happened? Here?
What is two-factor?
Yeah, exactly. What is two-factor?
It's not fear factor. It's two-factor.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. So we do have some classes that are geared towards that particular gap. But I think you brought up an even more interesting point, which is now our classes are starting to incorporate the folks who have always had it. The folks who have always had that technology around there, and as much as they're working in environments to secure them, they're also having to kind of backtrack what they grew up with, which is everyone gets a device, everyone gets access to everything,
everyone
posts everything everywhere, and then all of a sudden they start a job, and it's like, you might not want to tell someone that you're there. I've got a really good anecdote about this one. I worked with I went to school with a girl who graduated. She became a consultant, worked with a very specialized firm, got her first project, couldn't tell anyone what she did. Right, this is a few years ago. She gets on site. Her phone checks her into Quantico.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, she was not on that project much longer after that. So I use that as a good anecdote to describe kind of the differences that we're at, where once you step into InfoSec, you have to be a little more reserved about how you treat your online presence.
That's interesting.
And how you handle yourself online. And
well, because those guys are – I remember when that started back in the day. We participated in it with the studios a
mm-hmm.
little bit. And you know, they're kind of a bunch of ex-cops or FBI guys
yep.
and so there's that conservative mentality of we're going to do it this old school way. Although I do find the cops that involved in those things don't bring the innovation to the table.
They do not.
They're not innovators.
No.
they're guardians.
Not. They are. They're guardians. They've got the best war stories ever.
And they don't know what they're guarding, by the way.
Exactly.
Well, it's a digital thing. It's kind of important. I better not do anything with that. But they don't want to learn the technology. They're not incapable.
Yeah.
I was talking to who was our last guest, Lewis? We were talking to about this this issue that a new cop still doesn't get the technology.
Right.
It's a certain type of person that becomes a police officer.
Yeah.
That's not a person that sits in their basement of their mother's house and plays video games and becomes a hacker.
Very true.
Different person.
Yes.
Is that the way it's right?
Very different types of personalities yeah. with those career tracks, for
and
sure.
My son's a mathematician. He's getting his PhD. He doesn't know anything about computers. And by the way, he's not interested.
Yeah.
And I go,
yeah.
Max, dude, you could rule the world.
They all run on math. So
it's all math. But, yeah. but that doesn't interest him. He right. likes the kind of the spirituality of math, and I'm saying that seriously. There's
yeah.
a weird thing about
oh, yeah, no, I
math
definitely.
Is life, right?
Yes, very true.
Can't get an answer in that. And I would think that generation is the group of people that are embracing this stuff and get it. But no, I think I was lucky. You're probably, you know, you're closer to my age, obviously. We kind of invented it and kind of learned it. And I still think about DOS mm-hmm. prompts and how DOS thought in the computer.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
somebody tells me, oh, no, you can't do this forensics, I say, no. What you're telling me is you know how to do it.
Yeah.
So step aside. Let me go find somebody who knows how to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Right? Very true.
So it's very interesting. So the education part, how many people sign up for classes? I mean, are people standing in line to do this? Or are we still encouraging people to show up? Or what are we doing?
So SANS offers classes in different types of events. There's things called private classes where you could actually, if you've got enough people, you could bring a teacher in and do a private event at
well, that's
your organization.
Great. Yeah, that's great.
One. We also do, there's classroom themed events where it's groups of classes.
Okay.
And then we also do what are called SANS Summit events as well. And summits are usually either front-ended or back-ended with a two-day event. And that two-day event is filled with talks where it depends on the theme. So, for example, in January, we do a threat intel summit. In April, we do a threat hunting summit. This coming June, we have a digital forensic and incident response summit
okay.
in Austin, Texas. So they're themed events, but there's a multitude of ways. SANS also has classes online. And
oh,
we
good.
Also, you can do online. There's also what are called simulcast classes, which are online, but you're doing it with an instructor as well. So it's there's like kind of self-directed, self-study, and then also online, you're actually watching a teacher as well. So
yeah.
there's a myriad of ways to get them. But to answer your original question, the classes I teach are usually about 50 to 60 students.
Okay.
Every time at every event that we have. And like we did one here, we were back here in September. We did a SANS event called Network Security. It's a group of classes. It's every September. And that class was 80 students. 80 students learning digital forensics and incident response.
Now, you seem really busy doing SANS and you're with Kroll.
Yes, just
a little
bit.
How do you balance those two things?
I love to teach. I absolutely love teaching. I think it is the job of folks who learn how to do something and learn how to do it well, and not to boast, but learn how to do it well
no,
and
I
have
agree
it as a job.
I love doing this. To me, this is teaching.
And I think it's then...
Same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's then once you have that skill set, I think it's a responsibility to share it to others who want to learn it
yeah.
as well. So I also actively post on blogs and work with open source tools and do all things, everything I can to give back to the community, because quite frankly, I wouldn't be here if I didn't have a chance to learn from others.
Yeah.
And I think we should be passing that on.
What are the things the next big thing we got to worry about? Or not worry about, but what do you think you need to educate people on for the next big threat that's coming?
Yeah, I think the WannaCry, which I'm sure everyone's bringing up, everyone's talked about. WannaCry has really brought, and it's funny, by the way, a good anecdote.
Explain
for
it to my nieces and nephews who don't know what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so for anyone who's watching, I'm sure you've heard in the news over the past 10 days, there was a piece of ransomware called WannaCry
right.
that took advantage of SMB exploits all over the globe. And we're talking hundreds of thousands of machines were infected within a matter of hours. The big deal about WannaCry, though, is that it took advantage of an exploit that was created by a state-sponsored agency that then got released into the public that it shouldn't have been. And that is kind of – it's one of the first mass-scale instances where everyone sees – what has happened and what the exploit was capable of taking, you know, what the exploit was capable of taking advantage of. And I think the next threat is we're now at a stage where a lot of previously very secretive or very hidden malware types or exploit types or intrusions were kept secret. And we're now seeing that data being released to the wild.
Sleepers. How long have they been around, you think?
A long time. The exploit of the WannaCry ransomware, which was about 10 days ago, utilized an exploit that that package utilized exploits that have been around since XP. So
what?
For a while.
XP?
For a while, yeah. For a little bit.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I have a theory, and I was talking to our last guest about this. I said, do you keep around, a serial port connection in case I got some old box from 1984 and I need to connect to it? And they go, well, those are legacy things. We could do it. We don't really do it. I said, I think you should.
I do.
Because I think, if I get an XP exploit, maybe all these new high-tech people aren't looking for that anymore because, XP, nobody uses that. And now you're telling me those things are waking up and going, I've been sitting here for 15 years, 20 years, and nobody knew about it. That's amazing.
So this is
very
not,
clever.
This is not my wheelhouse, but SANS also does classes in the ICS space, the critical infrastructure space. And those systems, I mean, we're talking, that's outdated software. And it's not like you can just bring down an electrical grid to update it one night.
Right.
You know?
Well, but a lot of places still use that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, for their enterprise system, they got XP going.
Yep.
I know law firms that run XP, they'll never change it because they like it and they don't understand it. And XP's great.
U.S. Navy.
They still use XP.
They've paid Microsoft for extended support. So,
oh my God,
it's still out there. But you're right. I mean, things get put into place, and critical infrastructure systems are the best I can think of. They're put in place, and the analogy you can think of is what is the maintenance window of a power plant? You know, how do you tell a city, by the way, between midnight and 6 a.m. next Saturday?
That's true.
You know, and it's tough to necessarily upgrade those systems, and they work. They're still in place.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the security is terrible.
Yeah, nobody was hacking XP back in the day. I mean, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Well, my minor thing.
It's changed.
Yeah,
things have definitely changed now. But yeah, it is a weird day when you think of XP as actually being your threat vector on the internet. XP is what may bring you down,
right,
as opposed to some of the more modern systems. You know, folks got everything in the cloud these days.
Right.
There's cell phones, iPads, tablets, devices, Internet of Things, you name it. And it's the one XP box still exposed to the internet that brings you down. So
now, you brought a poster. Where did
I
that poster
did. Go? Yeah,
go ahead,
right,
you can go ahead and grab it. All right.
Now, I got it. Yeah.
Now, your boss wanted to make sure we got this poster here.
So this is actually...
Hey, Viviana, we're looking at your poster over here, in case you want to take a look at it. All right, she didn't see.
She'll see.
All right.
So for anyone who's watching, who's taken a SANS course, you may have heard of the course 572. For anyone who's not, we also, along with host-based forensics, we also teach network forensics as well. And our course author, Phil Hagen, who wrote the course, he's got a whole bunch of custom software inside of the course. And we've got a brand new poster. And I'm not sure if you've heard of SANS posters. We're famous for these.
Oh, you are? I didn't know that.
They're
okay.
Very So SANS is, we call it a poster company that also teaches classes.
How interesting.
Every now and then.
Right,
and what these are kind of, they're obviously double-sided, but they're quick look, quick answer posters.
This is great.
Yeah.
This looks like my OSHA chart.
Right? It's very close to that.
All the things you should do in OSHA.
So for anyone who does network forensics, some of these terms may be looking familiar, but
can
if
we see
not,
this, Lewis? Is it coming out?
Is it in there?
All right, good.
Perfect. Okay. So what we've done is we've categorized the different types of information based on what you're looking at, the network data source type. PCAPs all the way to log files. And then we talk throughout the poster about various places of how you would analyze that data, things you would look for, anomalies, how to collect it, how to parse it, how to enrich it. At the top quadrant there, we've also got discussion of SoftElk, which is a virtual machine that SANS builds and supports for this course.
Okay.
It's actually an all-in-one analysis and log ingestion tool. It's absolutely amazing. We go through a bunch of different software types and their different log outputs. And on the other side here... Which we'll see.
Is this the extra large and size fries?
Yeah.
All right.
On the other side here, we've got command lines. We've got walkthroughs for very popular network forensic commands, how to run them, what to do with them, and then also some other tools as well as an anomaly chart.
This is
as
great.
Well. So, yeah, it's a really informative poster.
Now, I know a little bit about this stuff, but I would be interested in reading this, and my eyes will roll up and say, what is this talking? But you know what? I think even a novice should even take a glamour at this and go, you know what? It lets me know something.
Well, it's yours.
It's very nice.
I'm going
to use that. Yeah.
But the beautiful thing about network forensics, and I've had this discussion with Phil quite a lot, is it's still TCP and UDP. It's still the same, still IP stack. It's still the same protocols that we had before. Very little change. We're just pushing more over it.
Interesting.
Now, so yeah, but no, that's yours to keep, please. It's an awesome, informative poster.
Did we do good, Viviana? Get your poster on there. All right, excellent. Make sure we do that. All right.
But so for anyone who's obviously not attending and is watching, this poster is available or will be available through the SANS website, so you can pick up a copy there. But anyone here at Enfuse gets a copy for themselves.
You know, I was very proud when I went online and got my Microsoft. I don't know, NT manager certificate or some nonsense.
Okay, the old MSCEs?
It's a useless thing. It's nothing fabulous, but, you know, I could get on a server and I could do a few things back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
What level is that poster at? Who is that for? Is that for the CISO level kind of stuff? Is this high-end?
No, it's definitely a technical poster. I think. Definitely a technical poster.
But I mean, technical what level? Like CISO's high-level technical. Is it for the chief technical officer level?
No, lower level. Folks who are working with network traffic on a daily basis.
Okay.
I would say, yeah. There's not much of a what is networking kind of thing. And that's not to be a slight.
No, I understand.
At different roles, you have different exposure.
Sure,
you know? But for folks who are actively parsing network data, whether logs or PCAPs, I think it's geared towards that because there's cheat sheets, commands, thought mechanisms, and that kind of stuff. Now, from a higher level, from the VPs and up, I would say it'd be a good poster to reference with your team to see, hey, are we looking at this type of data? Are we analyzing it?
Lewis, what was that? The compliance standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, like compliance standards.
Things like that. For example, like here's what this class discusses.
Right.
We discuss PCAPs. We discuss NetFlow. We discuss logs. If you're not looking at that in your in enterprise, in your environment, and whatever it is you're working in, that poster is a good spot to say, hey, are we looking at this? And if someone says no, well then, okay, we should be. And here's where you can start.
Right.
That anomaly section is the most important one, I think, because it's a good starting point for things that you may not be aware that you should be looking for, but also things that are going to stick out and may indicate something else fishy going on inside the environment. So
when is my Internet of Things IoT refrigerator going to wake up in the night and get mad because I didn't order butter or something and kill me? I mean, it's all connected. That's how they're going to get into the Pentagon through my refrigerator. I just know it.
Yeah.
And we just had a gentleman on here talking about the compliance part of this. Man, we were way behind on that stuff.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little scary.
It's a little scary that we're, I think, overall, the larger picture the Internet of Things paints is we're still designing internet-connected things and we're not wrapping security inside of it.
Here's what somebody told me about that once. I'm a retired cop. I look at the world as hostile. I take that back. I look at the world as unicorns, right? I think people are good. I really do. I think people are good.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that there's a certain percentage of people are bad. I don't paint that rosy. I don't treat people that are bad as maybe they're not bad. They're bad.
Right.
And I do believe most people are good, right? But having said that, I also know that there's a lot of malice out there and a lot of people that are running around doing a bunch of screwy things. So the problem is, if I'm going to hire a security guy, does ones and zeros, that guy does not look at the world as potentially bad. He's just a ones and a zeros guy.
Correct.
He doesn't care about security. When he's taking open source code off the internet and building some software, he could care less whether it's going to be a security breach because that's not his orientation to the world.
Very
true. His job is thinking.
Very true.
So we tend to, even in this day and age, we build something, we write the code, and then we say, let's put security on top of it. Security should be the very first line of your code is, do not try to hack me or I will obliterate you or something. I mean, so the hacker goes, oh, crap, I don't want to. A friend of mine was involved in writing building Earthlings Network.
Okay.
Back in the very resilient, right?
Yep.
And their first thing was security first.
Yeah.
Now we'll get the coders in here to do it. What is with that? Why don't we put, you know, the investigator / security guy, even if he's physical, because CISOs are security, but in a different way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why don't we just say, you know what? If you're going to code something, it's got to work with the CISO, the security guy, and let's not have these patches.
Yeah.
I guess a better way to describe it. That was a long way around, but that's what I'm saying.
I'm
worried about it.
Would you rather?
I know. Would
you rather know how encrypted your credit card is, or would you rather a cab shows up in 2 minutes?
Well, it's a balance. I mean,
it's a balance that we have to strike, but for the majority
of
folks,
by the way,
this is the worst conference to ask that question at.
Oh, well, that's true. Well, in one way, the reason they get that code out so fast is because it costs time and money.
Yeah.
I'm a capitalist, all American, wave the flag, but it's going to take you 3 more months to do the software. Is that going to kill you?
So I think what we've seen recently, and especially with phones and apps.
I'm going to come forward a little bit on that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Especially with phones and apps and things of that nature, I think some of the issues that we've seen is folks are so quick to get to market.
Which is good. I mean,
it's good in a way, but security is usually what suffers.
Right.
Performance is top notch.
Yep.
We could easily scale to 1 million customers a month if we had to. All right, well, can you secure those millions of customers a month if you have to? And that's where I think is one of the issues is that there's a lot of innovation and folks have a lot of great ideas, but those ideas are not about making things necessarily more secure. They're ideas about how to bring data to people.
Yeah.
And then security, like
which
you
is
said,
admirable, but
it becomes that afterthought because the other issue, and I see this a lot with a lot of clients who I work with as well, is they think, well, no one's going to want this data. Right? No one's going to want Uber trips records. No one's going to want that kind of stuff. And then you're like, well, don't you guys take payments? Don't you process credit cards?
Right?
And it's the main data point maybe no one's interested in, but it's all the auxiliary that goes inside of it is what folks don't think about. And then usually that's what kind of what happens. Another good example, Home Depot. Very well-known public, Home Depot suffered a massive breach.
Right.
And one of the C-suite members from Home Depot said, who cares? We sell hammers. And it's like, you sell a lot more than hammers. You got a lot of information there.
That's right.
And that is what I think, unfortunately, is a problem that's carried over into a lot of products and a lot
that's
of development.
Interesting.
Is folks look at it and they say, we just offer rides. No one wants this data. No one's interested in that.
Oh,
everyone tries to declassify
it.
I've seen folks make money off selling stolen, retired, closed Xbox accounts because there's still a way to get data out of it.
No, interesting.
And that kind of stuff. There's still sites that still have old databases inside
of them. So let me ask you this. If if we did build security from the ground up in all coding and took that extra time, wouldn't it actually make the software faster, more effective? Because what I see, and I could be technically wrong, is all these great companies coming in and putting patches and solving these security problems, which is great. Mm-hmm. But what if that was all incorporated into the original code? Wouldn't it be faster?
It would be.
I think.
It wouldn't be slower. Let's put it that way. It wouldn't be slower. Yeah. And here's why. Back, this is an old world mentality, which is disk drive space used to be very expensive.
Right.
Memory used to be very expensive. There was no cloud. So every little extra bit of code cost you something. Sometimes it was tangible dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
These days, hard drives are cheap. Memory's cheap. Cloud computing is very effective.
Right.
To add on more code and say it takes away from resources no longer is a valid argument.
That's a good point.
And
right.
The other side of it, too, is throughout the course of my career, I do a lot of work with folks that actually do things like secure DNS. DNSSEC is the acronym for that. And it's as fast as regular DNS. But it's infinitely more secure, protects a lot more data. So we are at the point, I think, where the excuse of, well, it's going to be slower, it's going to hinder it, things of that nature, I mean, okay, if it actually does, but right. I don't really think it will. The other side of it, too, is you made a great point about taking open source code to build applications.
Right, right.
You've got folks who say, I need to build a login mechanism for a website. They don't really know how to build a login mechanism, so they take code off of a website,
right.
And all of a sudden, now you can log in. No one thought about anything like input sanitization. Let's make sure that username is a username and passwords have some complexity that we like. The code is just kind of borrowed and implemented, and then later on down the line, something gets taken advantage of, a vulnerability gets exploited, and all of a sudden, it's like a weak code. So I think you're right in which let's get the security folks in there in the beginning. Let's get the code to be more secure from the start and say, okay, when I log in, what's that going to look like? It's going to be a max of 20 characters, and it's going to have text and maybe numbers, and that's it.
Are they different people, the basic coder guy and the coder guy with security orientation? Are they different sort of people and skills?
Yes and no. I think it depends. A lot of security folks write security software and open source tools and scripts and things of that nature. They don't necessarily become the most popular apps that we all use. So sometimes they're different.
All right.
But what I do see a lot of clients and organizations now is actually place a higher emphasis on it. So sometimes you've got those teams working together, and other times it is the development team becomes more security aware, becomes more security conscious
right.
in what they do. So I think it's an answer. It's a 50-50 split at this point. It depends on the organization. Some orgs are trying to catch up to security. Some orgs who are starting from the ground up, they're able to focus on security from the very beginning. I will say, though, overall, it seems to be getting a little bit better. There are some applications and some systems and platforms that are just going to be vulnerable for a very, very long time. It's just the way it is. But some of the newer things that we're seeing come out, we are seeing some improvement and some more dedication towards security from the beginning, which hopefully stays true, and eventually we can get to a much more secure state.
All right, Louis.
Fingers crossed.
Do you feel safer or less safe now? Safer, right? We every show, we do an interview and we go, you know what? This dude knows what he's talking about and I feel safe. Or we say, he knows what he's talking about and I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel safe. I could go the other way if you want.
You could.
But we don't want to go. I mean, we don't want to go that way.
Give us your website again.
It's actually, right now, I don't have one, but our website for Kroll, which is where I work, is kroll.com. SANS is SANS.org.
Excellent. And your name?
Matt Bromley.
Thanks for coming on Security
Guy
TV.
Thank you, sir.
Security Guy Radio.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.